Now, the federal government is moving swiftly to amend the Native Title Act following a federal court ruling called into question dozens of Indigenous land use agreements. They're called ILUAs. Indigenous land use agreements is kind of easier probably to understand what they are. And they set out conditions for access to Indigenous land for mining companies, pastoralists and even governments. The court found that an ILUA must be agreed on by all signatories to a native title claim instead of a simple majority. The government says its amendments restore the status quo, but one native title lawyer says they're being rushed through. Peter Seidel heads the native title practice at Arnold Bloch Leibler and has worked extensively on these. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thanks, Patricia.
This is a very complex case, but for those who are not knee-deep like you are in these sorts of agreements, how did they work before the court ruling? What's changed?
Well, as you said, Patricia, before this most recent court ruling, it was generally accepted because of a case that there needs to be only one signatory. So the signatory to the agreements represents the whole community. There could be thousands and thousands of people. It's not the case that those thousands of people have to sign an agreement, but before the most recent case, it was determined that it could be one person. Now, as you correctly said, it needs to be all of the applicants. Generally, there are about four or five. There can be more. So it requires the consent, the signature of all of those people now under this law, under the new case law.
The ruling related to a specific agreement in Western Australia. Did it automatically invalidate the 150 other agreements in operation, or would they have to be individually challenged?
What you said at the end is precisely correct. They would need to be individually challenged. So they're not necessarily invalidated by this case, although they're subject to challenge. So the government correctly moved to confirm what it says is the status quo. The status quo now is, of course, considered to be bad law. So it's not necessarily good to be engaging in a status quo that has now been said by the courts not to be correct. So
take us through the amendments the federal government is proposing and why you're concerned about them.
Well, I'm only concerned about some small aspects in a way, Patricia. It was a good move for the government to confirm those agreements that have already been registered. Time goes on. It is what it is. These agreements are in place. There would have been leases granted, monies paid and the like. Some of them go back years. So it's absolutely right for the government to validate those. In a sense, that validates the status quo. There are others that are yet to be registered, and some of them are quite significant, complex, controversial agreements that I believe the government is moving in haste towards effectively adopting that status quo when there needs to be more time for consultation. And thankfully, there's going to be. We've got the Senate Standing Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs that is now looking more deeply into these type of issues, and it will report on the 17th of March. So yeah. We've got more time.
Okay, so you've got a bit more time, but 17th of March in my world is pretty much almost tomorrow. Not quite. It's the 17th of March. To be clear, I know the different date, but it is quite soon. What changes are you hoping can be made through that process?
In the Noongar case, the new legislation is to the effect that what existed prior to this case is to be the position. That's not necessarily good law, because as we know, it was now subject to challenge and that challenge was successful. So at the very least, there should be in the Noongar case some form of community meeting, let cool heads prevail, resourced by government to allow the decision-making process on who should be the signatories to happen again, so that there's not the same false sense of urgency associated with it. May well be the community, armed with the new law, says, well, we're happy for a majority of the registered applicants to sign again, but let those people do it. There needs to be that kind of moderation here. So there are individual examples where there can be cool heads that prevail. The same exists with the Adani case as well.
So how about in situations where the community doesn't think a simple majority is good enough?
The community under the new law, which is, again, to be acknowledged as good, the community is allowed to say, well, such is the importance, we want all of the signatories. What this legislation does is empower the whole community, which is a very good thing. So that's to be applauded.
And I've got a text message here. A simple majority of litigants, surely. Why all? Somebody who...
Well, that may be a misconception that it requires the thousands. We're talking probably five people. In some cases, 12. In the Adani case, it's 12 applicants. Seven would like to sign and five won't. So we're talking about a small group of people. Similarly, in the Noongar case. So we're not talking about a massive amount of people. Let people have an opportunity to consider their view in the wake of this new law. Now, we've had the Closing the Gap report that came out last week, and the real emphasis is on community consultation, free, prior and informed consent. With rushing through these amendments, we are risking this fundamental principle. It's enshrined in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, free, prior and informed consent. And all I'm saying is that we need to act carefully, cautiously, respectfully in this process in some instances. But certainly we need to validate that which has occurred in the past so that we have certainty. It's not a question, as some have contended, of sovereign risk and the like. We saw all of these type of accusations that came out with a 10-point plan. It was like Chicken Little, the sky's falling in. Mm. It's not the case at all, Patricia. And so what we're saying, and it's been effectively granted, albeit only for a month, is that let community have their say here. It's absolutely essential that we do that. All indicators show that if we're going to close the gap, there needs to be empowerment on the ground. And we're not necessarily doing that with these amendments.
More broadly, if I'd love to get a comment from you, do you think we do work in the spirit of genuine consultation with Indigenous communities when it comes to lawmaking?
Not necessarily. In my experience, there's a lot of telling people. Chris Sara has recently said, and it's so accurate, work with us, not to us. We need to have real informed consent, spirit of cooperation. It is absolutely essential rather than telling people through top-down solutions. It's fundamental, Patricia. I've witnessed it. It's spectacularly successful over the years, but I've also witnessed it disastrously. So it's a fundamental principle that I'm sure, if we think about it properly, will be allowed in these contexts.
And just finally, we know that Indigenous people have different views on how their land should be used, particularly around access to mining companies, and you mentioned the Adani case.
Yes.
What are the implications with the Adani case of this these changes?
Well, with the changes, it's as if there's no community conflict. There is community conflict,
yes.
And the amendments paper over them. That may well be good for a short-term solution, but it does nothing for reconciliation, Patricia. So what we're saying in that case as well, there's also accusations that meetings were stacked and the like. It's a pretty toxic atmosphere. Allow the representative bodies to do their work. That they should be properly funded. It should be. There needs to be new community meetings to ensure once and for all that there is fair play.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Patricia.
And that's Peter Seidel. He's a native title lawyer with Arnold Block Liebler joining me to talk about those amendments. You're listening to RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvelis on your radio till 7:30 tonight. Lots more coming up, including up next, I'm going to be joined by our tech head for the week, and we're going to talk about these new Snapchat glasses. I don't know if you've heard about them. I don't know whether to be happy or really alarmed, and hopefully David Swan can help me out with that.